Lockjaw, the podcast junkie here, and you are listening to one of the funniest shows I've ever heard, Into Your Head, hosted by Neil O'Carroll and Joanne Farrell, all the way from Ireland.
Now, join me at a tremendously exciting moment. It's Into Your Head, number 85. I'm Neil O'Carroll. I'm your host. You're the listener. We've covered that. We've covered that ground previously, so I won't go into that again. Suffice to say, you're the listener, and I'm the person to whom you are listening. For now, anyway. I suppose you may have switched off as soon as I said that. As soon as I said to you're the listener, you may have been disappointed at the setup, after I outlined the setup of the show and explained who's listening and who's doing what, who's in charge, you mightn't have been happy with the setup, but at least I was open about it. I explained at the beginning, you're the listener, I'm me, I'm the person to whom you're going to listen if you're staying with the show. If you're not staying with the show, I'll say goodbye to you now. You've probably gone already, you've probably pressed stop. You've probably hit unsubscribe, and you've gone off to listen to Pod Show with, what's his name? That American fellow who lives in England, and he's always going on about Holland. What's his name? I don't know. He used to be on MTV, back when he used to be MTV and it played music. He used to play music. He was a disc jockey. He used to put on the records and then he'd put on the accompanying videos. And he used to have to match up the record with the video and make sure everything synced. So that's what he used to do. It used to be a respectable skill. No longer. It's all done automatically now. In fact, they have the sound and the video on the same recording now. They get these videos with sound on them. They don't have silent videos anymore. That all went out with the Charlie Chaplin era. And of course, he's dead now. So is Bo Diddley. He's dead too. And so is, loads of other people. That guy who used to be in... what's that thing? Ronan Martin's laughing. One of them died. I forget which. It was either Ronan or Martin. It might have been. Maybe one of them was called Ronan Martin and the other one was called Martin Ronan. Has that ever occurred to you? I don't know. Maybe one of them. Or maybe they were both called Martin Ronan and one decided to go by his first name and one decided to go by his surname just to avoid confusion. I don't know. I wasn't a follower of Ronan Martin's Laughing, although it was on in the early 80s here in Ireland. I did watch it then. I seem to remember a lot of jokes being involved. People looking out of windows telling one-liners. and all that sort of thing. I'm sure it was absolutely fucking fantastic. He broke off rather suddenly, and so am I. I'm thinking I broke off rather suddenly too, except I thought that a minute ago before I started recording. I get all of my thoughts done and out of my head and processed before I press record again and start a new segment. So I thought that a couple of minutes ago. I thought, oh, that ended rather abruptly. I seem to have been cut off in mid-word. So I can't even remember what the word is. You can probably garner it, though. I think, if I remember rightly, you heard enough of the word to figure out what the rest of the word was going to be. As long as your IQ is above a certain level. So that segment is only of use to people whose IQ are above a certain level. If you aren't able to figure out what the last word was, based on how much of it you heard, it's nothing to be worried about. It just means you're mentally, you've got a learning disability, and there's no shame in that. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. People in my family have learning disabilities, and it's absolutely fine. You're more than welcome to continue as a listener. It just means that that last segment will have been of no use to you, and that's not the way I planned it. I don't like to discriminate. I planned to issue a full word at the end of that segment. It's just that my battery ran out on my portable sound recorder. Possibly because I've been walking around a lot. I believe it uses up more battery when you walk around. Although now that I think of it, that wouldn't make sense. And so you would think that when you're moving, the dynamo is in operation. So that should save electricity, surely, and it should save on the battery. That's the way it always used to work on my bicycle when I was a child, anyway. When the bicycle was moving, the dynamo on the wheel generated electricity, so you could save on the battery. I don't know. Maybe sound portable sound recording devices are different from bicycles of the mid 1980s. I don't know. I'm not an expert on everything. If you come in to here with a Rubik's cube, I wouldn't be able to solve it, but I'd be able to identify it as a Rubik's cube. I think that's enough. You can't know everything about everything. All you can do is have a reasonable amount of common sense and general knowledge to get you through. And if there's anything advanced that you need to know about, you just need to know where to look for the information. You don't need to actually know the information straight away. If you were to ask me how many times do you have to slap a duck before you can tenderize it enough to cook it, then I wouldn't be able to tell you offhand. But I would be more than capable of looking it up in an encyclopedia or finding the information on the internet if it's there. So I'm equipped with research skills. And being equipped with research skills is an economical version, a way of educating yourself. You only need to find out the stuff that you need to know on a need-to-know basis so that you don't fill up your brain with crap, because that's what people used to do, especially in the 1980s. They used to fill their head up with crap and go on cheap TV game shows, especially in Ireland. We used to have loads of TV game shows. We had a Murphy's Microquism and Play the Game and some other thing, Talk About, and all these other things where people would come on and the fellow would say, here's a cube or something on the screen and you have to fill it up with words, and the words are based on the answers to these questions I'm going to ask you. And then he'd ask you, what's the capital of Afghanistan? And someone would say A. And by good luck, that would be the right answer. The capital of Afghanistan happens to be A. Well, in this fictional story, anyway, it's not really. If you were to look up the capital of Afghanistan now, you'd probably find it was Addis Ababa or somewhere like that. Actually, let's not. I was going to say let's look up what the capital of Afghanistan is, but I can't be bothered. I probably used to know a few years ago when Afghanistan was in the news all the time, but I don't anymore. So it's the need-to-know basis again. I forget things when I stop needing to know them. Now that Afghanistan isn't in the news as much, I no longer need to know what the capital is of Afghanistan when it's mentioned on the news. If someone says, an incident happened in A today, I used to go, oh, A, oh, that would be the capital of Afghanistan. But it rarely ever happens now that anything happens in A. A has gone back to being one of the quietest cities in the world, apart from all the war and terrorism and occupation and stuff. But sure, that's old news now. That's from back in 2004 or 2003 or something. It's 2008 now. The years have advanced. Time has marched on. We've all marched into the late first decade of the 21st century. And it's absolutely fantastic. The millennium is but a speck on the horizon of the desert of time that we've come to know as the early 21st century. It's all in the past now. There used to be that the millennium was ahead of us. It used to be we'd all say, oh, it's going to be millennium in a couple of years' time. And we'd all stumble on the word millennium, and then we'd get all excited about, what are you going to do for the millennium night? What are you going to do? Are you going to go out and get drunk and go and build a giant wheel in the middle of London and go for a spin on it? Or are you going to stay in and watch television with your teddy bears, Bowsy and Ulysses, and hope that in a couple of years' time you'll meet Joanne, and then you'll have less more interesting things to do on New Year's Eve? Ah, well, I don't know. I don't know what you did on New Year's Eve 2000. Probably very little, because on New Year's Eve 2000 you were still banjaxed from New Year's Eve 1999, which was when the Millennium Celebration was happening. But there you go. That's what you get. You're probably too afraid to do anything because you're afraid your computer was going to explode once the clock moved over to 2000. That's what we were all afraid of in those days. We thought, Oh, when it gets to midnight on the night of the 31st of December, 1999, my computer is going to say, oh, what's the year now? It's 2000. No, it's not. It's zero. I'm going to go back to zero now. And computers didn't exist in the year zero, so I'm not going to exist anymore. So I'm shutting myself down, terminating myself. That's what the computer used to say. That's what we thought the computer was going to say, but it didn't. Apparently computers aren't intelligent enough to self-destruct, so it just carried on regardless, and very little happened, except that, well, the year changed, but we knew that was coming. It turned out to be a bit of a downer, to be perfectly honest, that night. Basically, the year changed, nothing else changed, the world didn't end. We didn't get a big hand coming out of the sky and a voice attached to the hand saying, do you see what's happened to my hand here? My cat scratched it. And he's a giant cat. You can guess by the size of my giant hand coming out of the cloud that it's going to have belonged to someone who has a very large cat. Because there's no point a person as big as me having a very small cat. I wouldn't be able to pet it. It would just get lost in my hand. Or I'd probably suffocate it when I put my hand on its head to pet it. So yeah, I have a very large cat. Either that or I don't have cats at all. I don't know. Can you tell from my hand? Now, there'd probably be a certain percentage of the population who happen to be palm readers, and they'd have a go at guessing from the hand whether the owner of it has a very large cat or no cat at all. But palm readers, it turns out, are a load of bullshit, so they got that all wrong. They probably had a go at it. They said, oh, I'd say that guy has a cat, and I can tell from this lifeline that he's going to live longer than his cat, which is absolutely fantastic. In fact, he seems to have a very, very, very long lifeline. I don't know. And he's got a son called Jesus, and he's got another son who I don't know his name. Apparently he was adopted or something at an early age. Something to do with not wanting to be religious or something. I don't know. He was older than Jesus, so I don't know where he is now. Apparently I think he's the man on the moon. Of course, he wasn't a man when he was born. He was a supreme being. But, you know, kids nowadays, they're not happy unless they're the same as everyone else. You have to wear the same track suits and running shoes and peaked caps as all the other kids, because it's all peer pressure. And if all the other kids are humans, they want to be humans too and not be a supreme being. So the kid went off to be the supreme being. And then he got banished to the moon. And that's how the man in the moon works. He eats a lot of cheese. But that's fine, because it's full of protein. It's very good for you. It's very hard to get kids to eat cheese nowadays. But if you put them on the moon, they've got nothing else to eat except cheese. When they get thirsty, there's no water, so they have to melt the cheese down. But they can do that. They just use the heat from the sun. As long as it's at the right time of the day. They're pretty banjaks during the eclipse, during an eclipse. But they can prepare for that. They can hollow out some cheese and fashion a container out of it, and then put some melted cheese into that to drink during the eclipse. So don't worry about that. The man on the moon is absolutely fine.
Chili's getting his willy cut off. Willy cut off, willy cut off. Chili's getting his willy cut off on Wednesday. Yay! He's not going to piss everywhere, hop on Pippi. He's not going to piss everywhere and hop on Pippi the cat. Yeah! Chili's getting his willy cut off, willy cut off, willy cut off. Chili's getting his willy cut off on Wednesday. Yay!
I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, that's a load of crap. I don't believe in any of this man in the moon stuff. I don't believe it ever happened. I don't believe anyone ever went to the moon. It's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to make people think that people landed on the moon, and they never did. Well, I wasn't talking about that at all. If you bother to listen to the words that were coming out of my mouth and pay attention instead of formulating opinions before you even get to the end of a sentence, you'll realise I wasn't talking about humans landing on the moon. I was talking about the traditional man on the moon who's featured in children's nursery rhymes and stories. The man who lives on the moon, and inhabits the moon, and who doesn't really exist, of course. But that's nothing to do with conspiracies. You're thinking of the thing that where people say Neil Armstrong and that other guy, whatever his name was, never went to the moon at all. It was all a con. Someone set up a TV set somewhere, and they pretended to be on the moon, and they walked around, and someone they got some guy who didn't have much personality to come into the room, and he sucked all the atmosphere out of it. So they were able to pretend that there was a zero atmosphere. Now that bit there, that's where I know that the whole conspiracy theory story is inaccurate, because I know that's just some stupid joke. Some guy coming into the room and sucking all the atmosphere out of it. That's as old as the chicken crossing the road jokes. So that didn't happen at all. That conspiracy. I don't believe that the whole incident involving people faking the moon landing ever happened. I think it was made up. I think someone made up the story about the people making up the moon story. It's a conspiracy to make a conspiracy in order to make conspiracy theorists look stupid. So as far as I'm concerned, man never landed on the moon, but the fake moon landing never happened either. There's no moon. I don't believe there's a moon at all. I'm looking out here in broad daylight and I can't see it. Supposedly you can only see it at night. That's called a light. It's the same as my street lights. The street lights out on the street out there are only visible at night and not during the daytime. And it's the same with the moon. They're the only two things that apparently you can only see in the dark. Now, I have particularly poor vision. I have poor night vision. So I can't see very well in the dark. But I can see the moon and the street lights. And I can't see either of those during the daytime. So what does that tell you? Tell you the moon is fake. It was planted there in the mid-1950s by some guy who was trying to boost the economy after World War II and said, oh, we'll create this new place that we can explore because we've run out of places to explore. We've been to everywhere. It's like when you go out on a road trip and you think, where the hell will we go today? We could go up the mountains. We've been there. We could go to Stillorgan Shopping Centre. We've been there every bloody Saturday for the last month. We could go, I don't know, we could go to the Fun Fair. The Fun Fair isn't here at the moment. And then someone perks up and goes, let's go to the moon. And everyone looks around and says, don't be fucking ridiculous. We're trying to be serious here. And then the guy replies and says, well, this is just an analogy of the moon thing. We're a family in a car deciding to where to go for a Sunday drive, but we're being used as an analogy for the moon thing. And that's why he said the thing about the moon. And then someone else replies, you stupid Aegis, it's an analogy of the moon thing. So you're not supposed to actually talk about the moon. You're supposed to say something and that'll represent the moon in this analogy. So you'll say something like, let's go to the beach, and someone else will say, but the beach doesn't exist. And then they'll reply, let's build a beach, and let's film us going to the beach, because this is an analogy where the beach is the moon. But you fucked up the analogy now. You're after saying all this stuff about the moon. You're not supposed to be saying the moon at all. You might as well be one of those people in a sitcom who looks into the camera, and then you know that the character knows that it's not a real situation that they're being filmed. It's like, I can't think of an example at the moment, but I'm sure there's been sitcoms where in the middle of a scene, the star of the sitcom looks into the camera and says something to the audience. And that just ruins the whole fucking thing. It ruins all credibility. So basically, that's how the moon conspiracy works. There we go. That's it all explained for you. Editing process for show 85 of Into Your Head. Now, I've just loaded everything up. I've got everything off the sound recorder and put it on the computer, and I've dug out Joanne's cat song, which you'll notice is a song about Chili the Cat's upcoming operation, which she describes as having his willy cut off. Now, we all know that's not accurate. I didn't want to shock you there. I hope you all knew that we're not actually going to have the cat's penis removed. It's a much simpler operation than that. There are limits to what you can do to cats here in Ireland. They don't even allow you to declaw a cat here, so you can imagine that they certainly don't allow it to have its penis removed unless there's a very, very good reason. And despite the fact that Chili is urinating all over the place, that's not considered a good enough reason by either us or the veterinary profession. And I'm happy to say that, because we're animal lovers and we wouldn't want to remove the cat's penis unless there was a good reason for it. Chili's basically just having a snip for Pippi's protection and for our bed sheets protection as well, and various other reasons. So anyway, there you go. I've noticed that during the editing process that the show so far is only 17 minutes and 58 seconds long, and as far as I'm concerned, that's not enough. I require more. Whether you require more or not is irrelevant. I require more. I'm one of the listeners to Into Your Head. I'm the only listener to Into Your Head who has control over its content. Well, that's not completely true. The rest of you have control over its content too. You're all welcome to contribute anything you want to us. You can send content. If you want to record stuff up to 6 or 7 minutes long, you're more than welcome. Or if you want to leave a voicemail or a guest book entry, go to intoyourhead.com/stalk or email studio@intoyourhead.com. But apart from that, in this episode, I'm the only one who has input. I'm the only listener who has control over what's going to be output. Because my input this week is the total output. I hope that makes sense. The input that I put into this week's show is the only thing that's going to be outputted from it. I'm going to add in music, but that's my input as well. I don't perform the music, but I do find the music on my music creation device, which creates the music automatically, and then I insert it. So I am inserting stuff that I didn't create, that was created automatically by my Mad Player. But even still, I own the copyright on that, so it's as if I created it. All of this music that my music creation device creates automatically is owned by me, because I pressed the button. It was very difficult. I lifted up my Mad Player and then pressed play, and it played a brand new tune, and I recorded that onto my computer. So by pressing play, I was performing the music. I have to admit, musicianship is a lot easier than I previously imagined. But that's not to put down those who are in the music industry. I'm sure it's very difficult for them. Some of them have to press more than one button. If you're playing a piano, you have about 80 buttons to press. And that's why the likes of Elton John and Billy Joel are so highly respected. I was at a Billy Joel concert once. He started off by playing a big long piano instrumental thing called Prelude, and he was running along the guitar with his finger, not the guitar, the piano, with his fingers. His fingers were going up and down like mad, like a lunatic. But some fine music came out of it. I thought it was absolutely fucking fantastic. So I have the greatest respect for musicians. Especially when they've just come out of rehab and their wife has left them and they have to do a concert to make money so they can afford razors, because they seem to have grown a beard in the interim. I'm happy to support musicianship of all kinds, even those who don't have an automated Mad Player like I do. Maybe that's what Billy Joel should do. He should get a Mad Player. They don't make them anymore, but you can still get them on eBay. It'll cost you a couple of $100s. It's well worth it, I can tell you. It's the best thing I ever bought. Almost all of the music on this podcast is made by my Mad Player. It's mad. Not in a good way. Mad in a good way. It's the old expression that you hear a lot in Ireland. They'll say, that's mad. As if they'll usually mean it to mean, that's absolutely amazing and fantastic. Sometimes they mean it in a negative way. They'll say, that's mad. Not often. I don't think, not very often. Unless they're referring to a psychiatric condition, they'll say, you're mad. But they usually won't say that to your face, unless there's a thick perspex window between you and them, so that they're still saying it to your face, but it's to an image of your face that's appearing on the perspex window, because of course it's not a real window, it's a screen with a camera behind it, and the camera on the other side as well. So it's a trickery. It's a two-sided screen, and it's led to believe you to lead you into believing that it's a window. So you'll feel like you're being socialized with by the people in white coats when you're in the institution. Well, it's not a real window at all. It's a screen facing your way and a screen facing their way, and a couple of cameras, and it just looks like they're looking through a window at you. They're not. They're looking at a camera, and you're seeing them on a screen that looks like a window. So don't be fooled. If you're ever in an institution like that, now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, you say institution like that as if institutions are all bad things, and they're not. The BBC is a fine institution. The British Broadcasting Corporation. It's a fine institution, and ironically the BBC has made many documentaries about other institutions that are less good, but that's enough of that. 6 minutes and 25 seconds have been added to the programme, and that's more than enough, so we'll end it there.
If you would like to comment on any of the issues raised in today's programme, visit the Stalkers Forum guestbook
and online voicemail system
at our website, intoyourhead.com, or email us at studio@intoyourhead.com. Remember, we value the opinions of you, the humble and ignorant listener.